Welcome to another Salvation by Grace midweek message. Salvation by Grace is the teaching ministry of Grace Christian Assembly, a Sovereign Grace Fellowship in Smyrna, Tennessee. You'll find us on the internet at salvationbygrace.org. We are currently studying the minor prophets of the Old Testament. So grab your Bible and join the congregation of GCA, along with our teaching pastor, Jim McClarty.
I am very tempted to demonstrate my artistic abilities to you this evening because it helps to visualize Zechariah chapter 4. But then I remembered that even my writing looks like hieroglyphics, and my drawing is much, much worse. And really, the folks on the internet wouldn't benefit from my drawings at all. So that's my excuse for not doing any drawing tonight. I will try to describe this with words, and I think it'll help to get the basic description of the vision that Zechariah saw as a whole, and then we will look at the details of chapter 4. Of the various elements that we're going to see in Zechariah's vision in chapter 4, only a couple are interpreted for us by the angel. The olive trees in particular, Zechariah has to ask the angel three times what those are and what that's about. It's almost like the angel defers back to what he wants to talk about, but he does finally answer Zechariah's question. Basically, the image just begs for interpretation. And if you go online and read commentaries, you will see a great many interpretations out there. The safest way to approach it is the same way that we approached the book of Revelation, which when we began the book of Revelation, I said to you, nobody knows more about what John saw than John does. And then he wrote down what he saw. And whatever interpretive scheme we apply to what he saw, we cannot change what he saw. Same thing with Zechariah. This is what he saw, and even though it's going to beg for some kind of interpretation, what we cannot do is eliminate any of what he saw or what the angel told him, particular elements of it mean. Then we have to connect a few dots. And hopefully by the end of it, we will at least get some sense of the vision that will help us understand what God was getting at through this vision. Now, contextually, remember that Zechariah is encouraging the Jews who have come back to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple. They had begun the rebuilding of the temple 16 years prior. They had laid a basic foundation. They had even set up a makeshift altar. But then they stopped the work because the enemies who were occupying that area during the 70 years that they were collectively in Babylon, the enemies there didn't want to see the Jews returning, rebuilding Jerusalem, putting up their temple. And so there was a great deal of oppression against the people, so they stopped the work. And as we read in Haggai, God said to the people through Haggai, "You've all got houses of cedar, but my house lays waste. And that's the reason why you never seem to have enough. You eat, but you're never full. You bring home money. It goes into bags that has holes in it." And so God says to them, the reason that you're going through this suffering of lack is because my house is lacking. So that's Haggai's way of encouraging the people to get back to work. Zechariah's method of trying to encourage the people to get back to work is showing them a series of visions of what is going to happen, that there is this future coming, and that it is a glorious future for Israel and for the worship of God, not just in that temple, but but in the ultimate temple as well. So Zechariah has this very forward-looking encouragement to the people of Jerusalem trying to get this rebuilding effort going. Now, he has seen a series of visions so far, but this one is perhaps the most, shall we say, esoteric of them. It's the one that just kind of can be a head-scratcher. But I think we can figure it out. Because there is a clue in chapter 4, and the clue to the entire thing is in verse 6, where the angel says to Zechariah, "This is the word of Yahweh to Zerubbabel." Do you remember Zerubbabel? He is the governor who was put in place over the people when they left Babylon and came back to rebuild. He is a descendant of David, but he's not sitting on David's throne. So what we read a lot about, both in Ezra and Nehemiah, and then Haggai and Zechariah, are these two figures, Joshua the high priest and Zerubbabel the governor who oversees the people. And God says, "This is the message to Zerubbabel. This is the word of Yahweh to Zerubbabel. Remember," it's the reason that I recounted all that history, "that they had attempted to start rebuilding the temple, and they finally gave up because of the amount of opposition that they were under. And so they saw in themselves a weakness, an inability to finish the work because of the might of the enemies who were stopping the work. So the message to Zerubbabel is not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit, says Yahweh of armies." We see that language a lot, Yahweh of armies, the Lord of hosts, the one who's in control of everyone and everything in heaven, hell, and earth. He is the one, the Almighty God, the Sovereign God, who says, "You're going to accomplish this." And he is going to go on and say that Zerubbabel, the same one who oversaw the planting of the foundation, is the same one who's going to see the chief cornerstone set in place. He's going to see the capstone to the whole work. But it's not going to be accomplished by your might or your strength. The reason that you became discouraged was because you saw yourselves as not having the strength or the power to accomplish it. God says it's going to be accomplished by my spirit. I will provide the inspiration. I will provide the strength for the rebuilding of my own house. In fact, in verse 7, then it says, "What are you, great mountain?" Probably talking to those who oppose the work of rebuilding there, the ones who have all the strength. "What are you, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel, you will become a plain." In other words, he's going to flatten you. "And he will bring forth the top stone, that capstone, that chief cornerstone, with shouts of grace, grace to it." So the word to the governor is, you are going to accomplish this. My temple is going to be built, which, by the way, historically actually happened. That temple did get built. That was the same temple that eventually Herod continued to build during the time of Jesus. It was not, when it was built the first time, it was not as great as Solomon's temple once was. And so God is also going to say, don't be put off by the day of small things. Don't worry. It is my strength, it is my might, it is my spirit that is going to drive this project forward. And the same man, Zerubbabel, the same governor who laid the foundation, is going to see the work completed. So it's going to happen in Zerubbabel's life. Now, that is the clue to understanding the whole rest of the vision we're about to look at. That ultimately it has to undergird that essential message, which is not by power, not by human strength, not by your might, but by my spirit, you will accomplish this work. Now, the vision starts with a bowl, and in front of the bowl, there is a lampstand. It is basically a menorah. It's a lampstand that has seven lamps on it, seven arms, one central one, and then three U-shaped pieces of metal that branch out into a total of seven lampstands. It is exactly like the lampstand that is inside the holiest place, the one that is by the table of showbread, that lights the table of showbread. It gives light to the whole of the holy place. And so Zechariah sees that lampstand and understands the lampstand, I think, to be a designation of the light that is going to be in the temple of God once we finish building it. Now, that's a little bit of interpretation on my part, but what he sees is this lampstand. On the top of each of the seven lampstands, there is a small bowl, a small container that would have the oil in it, the wick in it, and then that would keep them lit. But then there are seven tubes that go to each of these lamps to keep a continuous flow of oil coming to them so that this light continues to burn. The light doesn't go out because there is a continuous feeding of this oil, which we're then told is a golden oil. Little bit of a clue there. The golden oil is flowing from the bowl that I mentioned earlier through these seven tubes down to these seven lamps that are on seven lampstands. And so the oil from the bowl comes down through the tubes into the lights themselves, keeps the lights burning, and the lights are supported by the lampstand. But then where is the golden oil coming from that's in the bowl to begin with? What he also sees is two olive trees. Initially, they are referred to as two olive trees. Later, Zechariah focuses in on branches, two individual branches that are apparently overflowing with fruit that are feeding golden oil into the bowl that is then working its way downward to the seven lights so that there is a continual light going on this lampstand. You get the picture? You get the image? Now, what we're told, what we actually know is that these seven lights themselves are the seven spirits of God that are going out into all the earth. Actually, it says that these are the seven eyes of God that are going out, roaming through all the earth. So what it may mean is this is a designation of God's all-seeing, all-knowing, but it is also a light. So not only is God seeing everything, but he's lighting his own way so that he can see everything. Now, that's a good thing and a positive thing if he's seeing you and enlightening you. But it is also, as we're going to see in the next chapter, it is also why God is a judge, because nothing is hidden from him. And he sees everything. He knows everything. So that, again, is a little bit of interpretation of what we are told, which is that these seven lights are the seven eyes of God that roam throughout the whole earth. Three times, Zechariah asks the angel about the olive trees. And three times, the angel talks about something else. So Zechariah keeps asking this question. He keeps coming back, but what are these? And finally, we are told that they are the two anointed ones that stand before God. Now, in context, and why I gave you all that historical context at the beginning, is that chances are that's a reference to Joshua and Zerubbabel, who are the two leaders at that point in Jerusalem, encouraging the people to rebuild. However, we're going to tonight also take a look at the book of Revelation, where the final two witnesses are referred to as the two olive trees who stand before God. So what does that mean? Well, that means we have to do a little bit of detective work tonight and figure out what these olive branches really are, what they really mean. But no matter what conclusion we come to, we can't avoid the fact that God has said, the angel has said, that these are the two anointed ones that stand before God. Now, that language, by the way, is very similar to the fact that David, the first king, was anointed. Each of the successive kings who ruled over Jerusalem were anointed as king. And that's the same language, and why I think that perhaps this is a reference to Zerubbabel, who was anointed to be governor over this people, and Joshua, who was anointed to be high priest over them. But that doesn't completely satisfy what we're going to read in the book of Revelation. And it's difficult to figure out how it is that Zerubbabel and Joshua are feeding the golden oil into the bowl, and that oil is going down the seven tubes to the seven lights, if the seven lights are the seven eyes of God, a clear reference to the Holy Spirit of God that is driving all this, especially considering what we just read, not by might, not by power, but by my Spirit. So clearly there's the Spirit of God involved in this. So then how can Zerubbabel and Joshua be feeding this golden oil into this bowl that then lights the Spirit of God? Well, those are the mysteries that we're going to try to figure out tonight. That was all introduction, and does indeed count against my time. Chapter 4, verse 1. Then the angel who was speaking to me returned and roused me as a man who is awakened from his sleep. That doesn't mean that Zechariah was asleep and that the angel shook him and said, hey, wake up, I got something to show you. What he's saying is when he had these visions, it was like an awakening to him. He could suddenly see on a level that he couldn't see before, and then he compared it to a man who's asleep and then is woken up. So he's saying in his day-to-day life that he, like all other humans, walks around not seeing all the spiritual stuff that is going on around us, and God has to open your eyes, has to awaken you to the realities that are around you. And so the angel who had been speaking to him aroused him again to show him another vision. And he said to me, what do you see? And I said, I see and behold a lampstand, all of gold, with its bowl on top of it. So this is the bowl that feeds the lamp. And its seven lamps on it with seven sprouts. Those are what I was referring to as the olive-catching bowls where the fire stays lit. Seven sprouts belonging to each of the lamps, which are on the top of it. So there is this bowl that is feeding this lampstand. The lampstand has seven stands, and then there are seven bowls, sprouts on top of it, where the olive oil is caught and the fire continues to burn. Also, I saw two olive trees by it, one on the right side of the bowl and the other on the left side. And then I said to the angel who was speaking with me, and I was saying, what are these, my Lord? Really good question. I mean, if you saw that, you'd be like, okay, that's odd. What am I looking at? It's helpful that he has an angel to answer these things. So the angel who was speaking with me answered and said to me, do you not know what these are? That is a question that he's going to use every time to sort of defer away from Zechariah's question. Zechariah says, what are these? And he goes, do you not know? Well, no, I just asked you. If I knew, I wouldn't be asking. And he said, do you not know what these are? And I said, no, my Lord. And then he, rather than tell Zechariah what they are, gives him the meaning of them. In other words, then he said to me, this is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel. However we interpret this whole vision, it comes down to being a vision that is sending a message to Zerubbabel. And the message itself can be summed up in, not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit, says Yahweh of armies. What are you, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel, you will become a plain, and he will bring forth the top stone with shouts of grace, grace to it. So it will be a time of national blessing, national celebration, when the temple itself is finally finished and Zerubbabel is going to be governor, when that building is completed, when the capstone is put on it, and the people are going to shout about the grace of God that has allowed them to rebuild this place of worship. There will be shouts of grace, grace to it. Also, the word of the Lord came to me saying, the hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house, and his hands will finish it. So within Zerubbabel's lifetime, this building, the temple, is going to be finished. And then Zechariah says, then you will know that the Lord of hosts has sent me to you. That sounds a lot like Jeremiah. As we were reading through Jeremiah, there were several times where Jeremiah had to oppose all the other prophets and what they were all saying. And he said, and when you finally see the things that I am predicting come true, then you're going to know that I'm the one that was sent by God to you. Zacharias is the same thing. This is going to be the proof that what I am telling you is directly from God. You in your own lifetimes are going to see the temple completed, even though you yourselves have given up on this project. And you're going to discover that it wasn't your might or your strength that accomplished it. It was the Spirit of God, the strength of God that actually accomplished this. Was that thunder? That was just emphasis from on high. I was talking about God's strength and God's power and then thunder. So that was well timed. The word of the Lord came to me saying, the hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house, and his hands will finish it. And then you will know that the Lord of hosts has sent me to you. For who has despised the day of small things? That statement, interjected as it is right there, I think what he's getting at is perhaps this temple is not going to be as grand as Solomon's temple. Do you remember when Haggai asked, how many of you are still here who remember Solomon's temple? And of course, there were people who could remember back to that. And Haggai was making the point that they needed to get to work and start rebuilding the temple. It wasn't going to be that grand as Solomon's temple, but you still need to do the work. And so perhaps that's what Zechariah is getting at, that you're not to despise the day of small things. They are still significant things. But these seven, okay, what's the previous seven he spoke of? It was the seven lights on top of the seven lampstands. But these seven, which in a moment he's going to identify as the eyes of God that roam throughout the earth, these seven will be glad when they see the plumb line in the hand of Zerubbabel. We've seen that language of plumb line a couple times now. And what that means is, if you're going to build any kind of structure to this very day, you need some kind of a level. You need some kind of plumb line that you're going to build off of so that your building isn't all built askew. And so the idea of the plumb line is that the work is beginning again. Zerubbabel is going to lay the plumb line to the rebuilding of the temple, and the seven eyes of God are going to be happy when they see that. Because by his strength, by his spirit, he is going to continue the work. And Zerubbabel, once he gets this message that it's not by your might, it's not by your power, but it's by the Spirit of God, that is going to be such an encouragement to Zerubbabel that he's going to get out there and begin the work again, and that's going to make God glad. These seven will be glad when they see the plumb line in the hands of Zerubbabel. These are the eyes of the Lord, which range to and fro throughout the earth. So the seven lights on the seven lamps are signifying the all-seeing, all-knowing characteristic of God, which is also the light of the world, because this is a lampstand that never goes out, that is continually fed by this golden oil, which I believe is the Spirit of God, and that Spirit of God continues to enlighten the whole world. He sees it all, he knows it all, and that is good for the enlightenment of the world and the grace that he gives to people as he draws people to himself, but it is also bad for those who are being judged, because by his light, by his continuous light, he sees everything, he knows everything, and when he judges rightly, because he has seen it all, he knows what's happening. And again, that's what the next chapter is about judgment. So then I said to him, returning to his original question, now that the angel has said, I'm not going to tell you what each individual thing is, but I'm going to tell you what the main point is. And the main point is, it's the Spirit of God that's going to bring about the building of this house. Then I said to him, what are these two olive trees on the right of the lampstand and on its left? And I answered another time, a second time, and I said to him, what are the two olive branches which are beside the two golden pipes which empty the golden oil from themselves? So the language is that the branches themselves are producing fruit, which is producing this golden oil, which is going down to the bowl that feeds the seven lights within the lampstand. And Zechariah wants to know, well, what is that? Who is this? What is this designating that these olive trees are continually flowing into this bowl? So he answered me and said, do you not know what these are? My answer would have been, you know, you said that to me once. And I'm asking the same question again. I clearly don't know what these are. And then he wraps up this vision with this simple explanation that is befuddling. So he answered me saying, do you not know what these are? And I said, no, my Lord. Then he said, these are the two anointed ones who are standing by the Lord of the whole earth. Now that is fascinating, because that's all he says about it. And of course, like I said, that just begs for interpretation. Like, wait, okay, so these are the two anointed ones. Like I said, that can be Joshua and Zerubbabel. They were the anointed ones to lead this work, this rebuilding of the temple. They were anointed by God to do this. But then in what way can we say that they are producing the golden oil that flows to the bowl, that flows to the lampstand, especially if the lights, the seven lights on the lampstand, are the all-seeing eyes of God that are running to and fro throughout the earth? Well, there are some interpreters, some commentators, who say that the bowl itself is representative of God, and that the oil running down to the lampstand is the Spirit of God that produces light into the world. And they say that there is a connection between the olive branches and the bowl, and that even though we read that the branches empty themselves into the bowl, that that might be a two-way street, that it might be God also, by his Spirit, empowering the trees to produce fruit in order to continue feeding the bowl and the lampstand. Because no one really knows what this could possibly mean outside of these are the two anointed ones who God is using to accomplish the rebuilding of his temple. And that's as much as we can say definitively. What the connection is to the bowl, it says that they dump their golden oil into the bowl. And we just have to kind of go, well, then that's what they do. But then turn to Revelation 11 for just a moment. Revelation chapter 11. At verse 1, it starts with, John says, "Then there was given to me a measuring rod like a staff, and someone said, 'Get up and measure the temple of God.'" Well, this is about the temple of God again. "Go and measure the temple of God and the altar and those who worship in it. Leave out the court, which is outside the temple. Do not measure it. For it has been given to the Gentiles, to the nations, and they will tread underfoot the holy city for 42 months. And I will grant authority to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy for 1,260 days, which is 42 months, clothed in sackcloth." But look at verse 4. "These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands that stand before the Lord of the earth." It's the same language we saw in Zechariah. So then we can't say that this is Zerubbabel and Joshua. So then what are we going to do about that? Now, when we read what they actually did, starting in verse 3, "I will grant authority to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy for 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth. These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands that stand before the Lord of the earth. And if anyone wants to harm them, fire flows out of their mouth and devours their enemies. So if anyone wants to harm them, he must be killed in this way. And these have the power to shut up the sky so that rain will not fall during the days of their prophesying. And they have power over the waters to turn them into blood and to strike the earth with every plague as often as they desire. And when they have finished their testimony, the beast that comes up out of the abyss will make war with them and overcome them and kill them, and their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city, which is mystically called Sodom in Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified." So it's clearly a reference to Jerusalem. "And those from the peoples and the tribes and the tongues and the nations will look at their dead bodies for 3.5 days and will not permit their bodies to be laid in a tomb. And those who dwell on the earth will celebrate and rejoice over them. And they will send gifts to one another because these two prophets tormented those who dwell on the earth. But after 3.5 days, the breath of life from God came into them and they stood on their feet. And great fear came upon those who were watching them. And they heard a loud voice from heaven saying, 'Come up here.' And they went up into heaven in a cloud, and their enemies watched them. And in that hour, there was a great earthquake." Okay, so given what they do, the particular plagues that they bring out, the particular miracles that they can do, and given that Moses and Elijah meet with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration, and that Moses and Elijah in the Old Testament are two characters who we don't have any record of them dying. We don't have their body anywhere. We know that Elijah was taken up in the chariot of God in a whirlwind. And so oftentimes when reading Revelation, we make that connection. We say, well, then that's who the final two witnesses are. 144,000 who have been witnessing for the 3.5 years, they're gone. It seems to be down to these final two witnesses. And then when they're dead and then come alive again and then are taken up into heaven, then God really starts pouring out the wrath. So they seem to be the last of the representatives of God on planet Earth. And so they are likened to the two olive trees and the two lampstands that stand before God. So maybe, just maybe, this idea of anointed ones who are represented by the olive tree and the lampstand mean in Zechariah, Zerubbabel and Joshua, but in the book of Revelation, God has other anointed ones for that moment in time who are also by his spirit, by his strength, testifying of him and pushing the work of God forward. And then maybe that is Elijah and Moses, or there are two beings that we don't know who were the anointed ones implementing the whole olive tree, golden oil, bowl, seven lamps on a lampstand thing, and those same beings are going to be the final two witnesses. I don't know. But what I know is the language is so very consistent between Zechariah and Revelation that God always has his witness. Always. And that they witness by his strength, by his spirit, and that they accomplish the things that God wants accomplished. Maybe it's Zerubbabel and Joshua. Maybe it's Moses and Elijah. Maybe it's two olive trees that we don't know yet, that we haven't met yet. What we know is God is very, very consistent with himself. And Zechariah saw it, and John saw it. And as I said at the beginning, no one knows more about what Zechariah and John saw than Zechariah and John. And they told us exactly what they saw. We, of course, want desperately to interpret it and understand it all. But you'll notice that even Zechariah wanted more clarification, and the angel ended up just telling him what it meant rather than what it was. It means, by the Spirit of God, the temple's going to be completed. By the strength of God, what God intends to have happen will indeed be accomplished to the point where other kingdoms, other peoples who consider themselves mountains on planet Earth will be leveled down into plains because they oppose the work of God. Because it is his strength, it is his power, it is his spirit who accomplished it, whether we're talking about Zechariah's day or Revelation in the future, God will always, by his spirit, accomplish his will. That's my interpretation of it. And that's trying to stick to what we do know and not wander too far away from it. I don't think we can identify definitively who those olive trees in Zechariah are. But we know that the Spirit of God flows through them to the degree where that golden oil goes into the bowl that then lights the lamp that is the all-seeing eye of God, the seven eyes of God that roam to and fro throughout the earth, that enlighten people and judge people, but every single bit of it is not accomplished by human might, human power, human strength, human will, human decision. It is all accomplished by the Spirit of God. That we know.
That's what it says.
That's what it says. So I'll stand on what it says.
I think it's pretty interesting. There's a couple of verses in chapter 4 here that I have seen, the first one repeatedly, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit. It's always just that.
Right.
It's a meme.
Yeah.
Memory verse.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't have any context with it, but that means you can apply it to anything you would like.
Absolutely.
Now, certainly.
But the context is the rebuilding of the temple.
Right.
Yeah.
Certainly, the fact is any work of God has to be done by his spirit. So there's a secondary application, but it's not the primary application. And yet, you can make it what say whatever you, I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me, including win the basketball game tonight.
Right.
The second one, this one, there was a time.
Oh, let me guess. Don't despise the day of small things. Yeah, I've heard that so many times, yanked out of context to say, if you're a preacher in a small church and you're just, you know, your work is, don't despise the day of small things, right?
We actually knew a couple who used that as a proof text to say that a previous church, which had maybe 150 people in the auditorium on Sunday, it was too big.
Ah.
Because, you know, you can't despise the day of small things. So our small group here, and it's like, really?
Yeah.
It's so easy to grasp a segment of Scripture and make it say whatever we want it to say instead of looking at what it says around it. So it frustrates me. I mean, YouVersion has a daily Bible verse. And so many times I look at that and I say, read the rest of the chapter because you got to.
Context. Yeah.
So it, I don't know how many times I've seen or heard those two verses used and never correctly.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate this study tonight.
Oh, well, thank you.
It puts it right where it needs to be.
That's what I was trying to do, and I was hoping I was succeeding at it. But if you think tonight was a little bit of interpretive fun, come back next week for the flying scroll, because that's even more fun.
Well, that's easy. That's flying saucers.
That's flying saucers, clearly. Yeah, chariots of the gods.
Yes.
Yeah, so if you like tonight, be back next week, and we'll dig further into Zechariah's visions. Any other comments, questions, feedback?
I quickly read through that first line of the next chapter and just sped through it, and I got, behold, a flying squirrel.
You want to go back and read that again. Yeah. So.
Might have missed some.
All right, well, good then. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for listening to this week's Salvation by Grace Midweek message. We encourage you to visit our website at salvationbygrace.org for books, articles, and our ever-expanding archive of audio sermons. And we invite you to join us next time when we gather around the Word and study the sovereign grace of God.